Hello and welcome to Iris for Sunday, November 19th, 2023. Your reader is Trevor, and I'm pleased to bring you the Sioux City Journal for today. Dagna is your normal reader for this Sunday, however she and I traded as she's out of town, and so you'll hear her voice next week, and you'll hear my voice this week. So, let's do a quick look at the five-day forecast to see what the Siouxland weather has in store for us. So we can see that today it'll be cooler with rain, with winds from the southeast at 7 to 14 miles per hour and a high of 57 degrees. Tonight it will be rainy with winds from east-southeast at 8 to 16 miles per hour and a low of 41 degrees. Monday, periods of rain, winds east-northeast 8 to 16 miles per hour, a high of 49 and a low of 30. Tuesday, mostly sunny and breezy, northwest 10 to 20 winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, high of 45, a low of 23. Wednesday, partly sunny and milder, winds from the northeast 6 to 12 miles per hour, 58 degrees and low of 28. Thursday, partly sunny and cooler, winds north northwest 8 to 16 miles per hour, high of 46 and a low of 25 degrees. So things are certainly getting a little bit chillier, and we'll be getting the below freezing point. So let's now turn to the front page of the today's Sunday Sioux City Journal, where we look to Thanksgiving, as we are now on Thanksgiving week. Thanksgiving dinner 2023, headline, an extra hand in the holiday kitchen. Subheadline, Sioux City companies offering special menu items. There's help out there for holiday cooks in Siouxland who need an extra hand with the Thanksgiving meal. Melting Cow Barbecue in Sioux City is offering pre-orders of the main course for Thanksgiving. Co-owner Nick Carter has been busy preparing smoked bone-in turkey breast, but that's not all. If you're thinking outside the box for your Thanksgiving menu, Melting Cow is also preparing several barbecue staples for pre-order. For the sweet treats and desserts, Crumble Bakery in Sioux City has a pre-order Thanksgiving menu which includes pies, cheesecakes, quiche, and rolls. Owner of Crumb, Jake Hawkins, said he decided to offer a pre-order menu after their Sioux City Farmers Market customer started asking where they could get their pastries after market season ended. Crumb didn't have a retail space yet. Crumb launched pre-ordered offerings on the company's Facebook page about a week ago, and business has been steady. Customer favorites are split between several items. Quote, we are doing a traditional pumpkin pie and then a caramel apple pie with the lettuce top and oatmeal crumble underneath that. Those are the top ones, Hawkins said. They also have salted caramel cheesecake, pumpkin swirl, and walnut caramel cheesecakes. A pumpkin layer cake and toasted s'mores chocolate layer cake are also available for order. Other favorites include carrot cake, their classic cheesecake, and cinnamon and pecan rolls. Quote, I would encourage people to take advantage of the local bakers that we have. It takes a little bit of stress out of the holiday season by not having to worry about getting desserts, and people might want to try something unique and make memories for the day, Hawkins said. Nick Carter and Stacy Johnson, co-owners of Melting Cow BBQ, have smoked turkeys on their menu this Thanksgiving. Quote, we just slow smoke it and we make sure not to overcook it, Carter said. Besides turkey, we also offer items like ribs, brisket, and stuff like that for anybody who doesn't like turkey. The pre-order schedule is filling up since they only have so much room in their smoker. Quote, I've been hearing from a lot of people who are very happy for the convenience. People are excited to be able to come and know that I'm taking care of the work for them. They can pick it up and head right to their event, Carter said. So that sounds like an option for to support local business. And in also if you have looking for some different options for Thanksgiving later this week. And the journal had multiple pictures of Nick Carter cooking at his grill at the Melting Cow Barbecue, where he's preparing different types of meats for that occasion. All right, let's now turn to the front page of today's paper again, where we look to the next story. Headline, doctors criticize proposed abortion rules. Subheadline, physicians will be required to question rape victims. From Des Moines, the Journal Des Moines Bureau. It's being proposed that doctors in Iowa would be required to ask multiple questions of rape and incest victims and document their answers before performing an abortion if a woman is more than 6 weeks pregnant. That requirement is among the rules being proposed for implementing Iowa's new abortion law, which would make abortion illegal once a fetus's heartbeat can be detected, generally around 6 weeks. The new law includes an exception under which a woman can have an abortion beyond that 6-week mark if her pregnancy is a result of rape or incest. The fetal heartbeat law, approved by State House Republicans, is being challenged before the Iowa Supreme Court. For now, abortion in Iowa remains legal through 20 weeks of pregnancy. If the new law survives the legal challenge, the Iowa Board of Medicine is required by law to adopt rules to govern implementation of the law. The state medicine board rules would go into effect at the same time as the law. Under the proposed rules, when a patient claims to be the victim of rape and asks a physician for an abortion, the physician must ask on what date the rape occurred, how old the patient was at the time of the alleged rape, and when the patient reported the alleged rape to law enforcement or another health agency, if it was reported. The physician is to record the information in the patient's medical files and determine, quote, whether the fetal heartbeat exception for rape applies. The law and proposed rules require similar fact-finding efforts by physicians in cases of incest. On Friday, a state medicine board member asked how a physician determines whether a patient has been raped. An attorney for the Iowa Attorney General's office said that under the proposed rules, the physician is required to make that decision. The new law, quote, does require that the doctor to make that determination, and it does so by setting forth the information that the doctor must gather, Deputy Attorney General Leif Olson told the board. Quote, it doesn't specify precisely the questions that have to be asked, Olson said. It's up to the doctor to determine which questions to ask to get the right answer. And we trust the doctors, using their professional judgment, know how to elicit information from a patient to get to the root of a problem. Olson previously worked in the Texas Attorney General's office and former President Donald Trump's Labor Department. During the public comment period, Dr. Francesca Turner, an obstetrician and gynecologist in Des Moines, said the proposed rule states that physicians must not only interpret the legal statutes regarding rape and incest, but also ask facts surrounding the timing of events, such as the occurrence, the reporting, and the individuals responsible and their familial relationship to the patient. Quote, none of this information is necessary to provide medical care and abortion. Turner's statement was signed by 100 Iowa physicians. Dr. Deborah Ann Turner, an obstetrician and gynecologist in Des Moines, and recent president of the League of Women Voters of the United States, said, quote, it is clear that these rules are written to assure that most women and those who can become pregnant are certainly girls who are a victim of incest or rape are prevented from access to abortion and choice. Doctors also note it can be difficult for victims to recount the circumstances of traumatic events. Medical experts, including the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, say what's detected at 6 weeks of pregnancy is not a heartbeat. Heartbeats, they say, cannot be detected until around 15 to 20 weeks of pregnancy. The Iowa Board of Medicine on Friday voted to publish the proposed rules for public comment and will consider any feedback and discuss them at the board's next meeting in December. Per the normal process, the board has 180 days from when the law was signed to approve rules. That means the board has until January 10th to approve new rules. Iowa's rulemaking process provides standards and guidelines to assist with the implementation of new state laws. While the legislators and the governor pass laws, state boards populated by governor appointees approve the rules to say how the law will be implemented. Olson said the proposed rules for new abortion restrictions in Iowa were drafted by staffers from the State Medicine Board, the Attorney General's Office, Health and Human Services Department, and the Department of Inspections and Appeals. All right, I will now switch over to the Saturday, November 18th edition of the journal, just to kind of fill in our time here, as the Sunday edition is just a digital-only edition, and only leaves us just a handful of articles, where I think the Saturday edition is actually a version that is both in digital and in print. All right, headline, quote, an old soul, subheadline, Sioux City Musketeers, comma, administration remember former player Adam Johnson. When trying to describe Adam Johnson off the ice, former Sioux City Musketeers coach Jay Verade, who led the hockey team for 4 years, landed on the phrase old soul. Quote, he was grumpy at times and that was fun, Verade said about the Minnesota-born center he coached for 2 years and who made Sioux City's 2010s all-decade team. Quote, he'd be a little grouchy some days and you'd have a little conversation with him and he'd give you a smile and skate away. And I think that's why everyone loved him so much. That love has come in droves from every corner of the hockey community since news broke on October 20th that Johnston, 29, had died after an on-ice incident with England's Nottingham Panthers in which his throat was cut by the skate of Sheffield Steelers player Matt Petgrave. The next day, the elite Ice Hockey League, which counts the Panthers and Steelers as two of its teams, canceled all games, and fans of the team came to Nottingham Ice Center to leave flowers and other tributes. The Pittsburgh Penguins, Johnson's team for two seasons, and the Anaheim Ducks gathered before a game October 30th to honor Johnson, while a photo of him was shown on the scoreboard. The staff at the University of Minnesota Duluth hockey team, where Johnson also played, said they were, quote, eternally grateful for his time with the program, which included a national championship appearance in the 2016 to the 2017 season. A November 6th memorial in Hibbing, Minnesota, Johnson's hometown, brought out thousands and featured photos of Johnson on the ticket booth of the Hibbing Memorial Building, a place where he scored numerous goals. As for the Musketeers, team CEO Travis Morgan said Sioux City's USHL franchise will honor Johnson all year. Before a home game against the Cedar Rapids Rough Riders November 3rd, current players Ty Hansen and Dylan Goldboat skated out and placed Johnson's number 7 jersey on a chair at center ice. Defenseman Liam Hupka, who was wearing Johnson's number, made the switch to number 6. Quote, we're wearing stickers on our helmet with AJ number 7 on it, and we're talking about doing something with maybe a patch on a jersey or doing something more permanent, Morgan said. Current Musketeers coach Jason Kersner said he addressed the story with the team and allowed those who knew Johnson to educate the players about how much he meant to so many. Quote, you balance the sadness and feelings of grief and sorrow with that appreciation and gratitude that we have the opportunity to be here and represent this great community. Johnson and Verity both joined the Musketeers for the 2013 to 2014 season and spent 2 years together before Johnson went to college. When Verity first got word about Johnson's passing, he said his thoughts drifted to the family and to everyone who played with Johnson in Sioux City. Well, we've talked a lot of those guys through texts, through calls, and conversation. That process is interesting because I'm one of these guys myself. Luke Strand, Keith Paulson, Mark Ablam, Lloyd Ney, we all have interactions with these former players in really different ways based on where we're coaching, where they're playing, and where we see them, where we live, Verde said. Well, we want to make sure that people are able to have conversations about Adam and be able to grieve. We really tried to express how much we cared about Adam to Adam's family, to his mom and dad. As Johnson moved through his career, Verde said he enjoyed keeping tabs. Quote, he was one of those players I love to coach. He was extremely intelligent. He knew all the situations in the game, he said. In his first year, Johnson scored 46 points in 56 games played. Year two, he upped his point total to 71 in a 59-game span. Only 10 Musketeers players across 51 years of the team have scored more points than Johnson, according to the Internet Hockey Database. Jesse Monell, head coach of the Sioux City Metro's prep hockey team, had a chance to watch Johnson play and called him, quote, extremely talented. He also saw a laid back side. Quote, we were a billet family, i.e. a host family, when he was playing for the Muskies here, and occasionally the group of guys would come over and he'd be a part of that group and just eat and play a little ping pong. He just carried himself real quiet. He was just very well-mannered, Monell said. Morgan concurred. Quote, people talk about him as an elite human being. He was pretty soft-spoken, had great manners, had great respect for his teammates and organization, and did everything the right way, he said. Johnson's death comes about 2.5 years after former Sioux City Musketeers goalie Mattis Kivnicks died at age 24 following a fireworks accident in Novi, Michigan on July 4, 2021. Morgan said both players were beloved by the organizations and its fans, and each are missed dearly. Well, this organization has been through both of hockey's biggest tragedies over the past 3 years. Worldwide tragedies that everybody in the hockey world was talking about, whether it's ESPN or network TV or massive publications all across the world. And unfortunately, both of them have been former Musketeers, he said. Verity coached both players with the Kilvinics tragedy and the Johnson tragedy. Verity said he made sure to try and be there for the families of the two players and for their former teammates. One of Johnson's closest friends, Neil Pionik, met him while playing on the Musketeers in 2013. Quote, they created the connection in Sioux City and then went on to Duluth and became lifelong friends, Verde said. We played 4 years together. We lived together for probably 6 years, Pionik, a defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets, told the Winnipeg Free Press. On top of that, we golfed together every summer. We fished together. His family is like family to me. He was like one of my brothers. The first 3 days, I didn't know I could cry so much. The last couple days, but some of them are good tears too, because we've been sharing some really good stories, and that's what it's about. Since Johnson's death, the Winnipeg Free Press noted Pionik is one of a number of NHL players who have taken to wearing neck protection. Minnesota Public Radio News reported that the USA Hockey's Board of Directors has begun the process of recommending rule changes for protective neck gear after Minnesota native Adam Johnson died after a skate slashed his neck in a professional game last month in England. Morgan said he doesn't know whether neck guards will become the norm across all levels of hockey and that whatever decision is reached by the hockey board will take time. Quote, you don't want to make a knee-jerk reaction, but you also have to look at it from a safety standpoint too and make sure they're weighing all the options and you're doing all the correct research before you can make a decision, he said. Monod welcomes the change. I do see it coming down, which is a good thing. A neck guard is nothing that really hinders a player at all. It's just a protective piece that kind of stops that sharp blade if it ever gets up to that. Verde said whether there's a shift is something entirely outside his scope. What he does know is how large the Sioux City Musketeers loomed for players such as Johnson. Quote, they've been there for 50 years now plus, and for the players who have gone through, Sioux City has been an important part of their life. All right, let's now turn to the next headline story from Saturday's paper, yesterday's paper, to be clear, about the federal trial of Kim Fong Taylor. Headline, Taylor's name kept coming up during FBI voting probe. From Sioux City. As the FBI investigated the questionable voting documents filed during the 2020 elections in Woodbury County, agents noticed a couple patterns from statements given by Vietnamese-speaking voters to investigators and before a federal grand jury. Those patterns depended on which generation was being interviewed, FBI Special Agent Matt Murphy testified Thursday. Among grandparents and parents, those who immigrated here and were less likely to be fluent in English, that Kim Taylor had interacted with them and had filled out or assisted in filling out voting documents, Murphy said. And among their children, those who grew up in Sioux City and spoke and understood English, they told us that they didn't vote. Yet in some cases, absentee ballot requests and completed absentee ballots were filed on the younger voters' behalf prior to both the 2020 primary and general elections. Federal prosecutors have charged Taylor with 52 counts of voting-related fraud, accusing her of conducting a scheme in which she fraudulently filled out voting forms and ballots on behalf of dozens of Vietnamese voters, many who have limited English comprehension. It's alleged Taylor filled out the forms and had a voter sign on behalf of children and grandchildren without fully explaining or interpreting the forms or telling them that they needed permission before signing papers on another person's behalf. Prosecutors believe Taylor, who has pleaded not guilty, did so in order to amass votes for her husband, Jeremy Taylor, a Republican who ran unsuccessfully for his party's nomination for a U.S. House seat in the 2020 primary and was elected to the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors that fall. Jeremy Taylor has not been charged but has been named as an unindicted co-conspirator. Through 4 days of trial in U.S. District Court in Sioux City, several witnesses have viewed voting forms that they said they did not fill out or sign. Older voters said Taylor filled out the forms. They signed them, and Taylor then took them and dropped them off at the Woodbury County Courthouse. Brothers Min Nat Pham and Min Tan Pham both testified Thursday that they have never voted and did not know who filled out and signed voter registration forms and absentee ballot request forms or submitted ballots in their names during the June 2020 Republican primary and November 2020 general election. Both men said they did not live in Sioux City at that time, and handwriting and signatures on the forms were not theirs. They did not give anyone permission to request forms or vote for them, they said. On Wednesday, their mother, Mai Do, who requires an interpreter or translator to understand English, testified Kim Taylor had brought the forms to her home. Do said she signed all the documents and the ballots on her son's behalf, but Taylor did not read her information explaining the forms must be signed by the person whose name appears on them. Hal Nguyen, an 86-year-old who immigrated from Vietnam in 1993, testified through an interpreter Thursday that Taylor had brought forms numerous times to his home, where he lived with his wife, son, and at times granddaughter. He said it was hard for him to remember if Taylor would translate the forms for him, and he didn't remember ever filling out a ballot. Quote, I gave everything to her, referring to Taylor, Nguyen said. She filled them out. She did whatever she wanted to do, end quote. Nguyen's granddaughter, Yen Nguyen, a 22-year-old Iowa State University student, said she's never voted, couldn't have signed an absentee ballot in form in September 2020 because she was at Army National Guard mobilization at the time. Still, the request set and a subsequent ballot were filled out, both documents bearing her signature. Quote, that is not my handwriting, she said when shown the documents. Murphy said his investigation began in late November 2020 after receiving information from Woodbury County Auditor and Recorder and Election Commissioner Pat Gill about two absentee ballots being cast by Iowa State students who said they had not voted. During more than 50 interviews, Murphy said, Kim Taylor's name kept coming up as someone who was helping Vietnamese voters with election forms. Under cross-examination from Taylor's attorneys, F. Montgomery Brown, Murphy said he did not have any of the documents examined by a forensic handwriting examiner in an attempt to identify who had filled out and signed questionable documents he collected as evidence. Quote, we thought witness testimony and statements were sufficient, Murphy said. Murphy said the case remains under investigation. At the conclusion of Murphy's testimony, the government surprisingly rested its case, which had been expected to last into next week. On Friday, Brown moved for a motion of acquittal, a routine action in which the defense argues the prosecution has not submitted sufficient evidence for jurors to find the defendant guilty. Chief United States District Judge Leonard Strand reserved judgment on the motion and said the case would proceed to the jury. Strand also ruled that Brown may not have a planned witness to testify before the jury by overhearing a statement Woodbury County Auditor and Commissioner of Elections Pat Gill made to another person about considering a run for a seat on the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors. Gill denied making the statement when testifying earlier in the trial. Strand said the statements have nothing to do with the charges Taylor faces. The trial will resume on Monday when Brown will call witnesses for the defense. Brown told Strand he believes he would be finished calling witnesses by noon, leaving the possibility that closing arguments could be made yet on Monday. All right, let's now turn to The Week in Iowa, or page A6 of Saturday's paper. It's a collection of shorter articles from around the state. Let's look in the news. Headline, State Board Advances Book Banning Rules. The State Board of Education approved proposed rules governing the implementation of a recent law that bans certain books from Iowa school libraries and enacts other rules intended to increase transparency at public schools. The law requires school libraries include only, quote, age-appropriate materials and banned any book that included a depiction or description of a sex act. The proposed rules do not provide a list of books that should be removed, but they do note that a reference or mention of a sex act is not grounds to remove a book, clarifying the ban on teaching about gender identity and sexual orientation in certain grades. The board also confirmed a, quote, neutral mention of LGBTQ characters is allowed in school books. Headline, Iowa representatives call for Santos to resign. Three of Iowa's U.S. House representatives joined the growing chorus of lawmakers calling on GOP Representative George Santos of New York to resign following a House Ethics Committee investigation. The committee found evidence Santos had committed a litany of financial crimes related to his 2022 campaign, including soliciting fraudulent donations and stealing from his campaign account. Headline, unemployment rises in October. Iowa's unemployment rate ticked up by 0.1% in October to 3.2%. The number is a reflection of national trends as federal regulators try to cool down the economy and slow down inflation. The national unemployment rate last month was 3.9%. Headline, Attorney General condemns Trump gag. Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd led a group of state's attorneys general in court in a court brief calling for a gag order on former President Donald Trump to be overturned. The order imposed by U.S. District Court Judge Tanya S. Chutkan has been appealed by Trump's lawyers. Headline, Fairfield murderer sentenced. A teen who was convicted of the 2020 murder of a Spanish teacher in Fairfield was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 25 years. Jeremy Goodale and classmate Willard Miller were convicted of killing Nohina Graber, age 66. Odds and ends. The 2024 watch for elections. U.S. Senator Tim Scott dropped his bid for the presidency last week, leaving only a handful of Republican candidates in the race for the GOP nomination. Former President Donald Trump remains the clear frontrunner as challengers Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley begin to air millions of dollars in ads in Iowa ahead of the January caucuses. MMM challenger. U.S. Representative Marionette Miller-Meeks will face a primary challenger in 2024 after Davenport Faith leader David Pausch announces candidacy. The Republican criticized Miller Meek's support for marriage equality and her opposition to electing Representative Jim Jordan, of Republican of Ohio, as the House Speaker. A Republican, Miller Meek was first elected to the House in 2020. Next headline, DeSantis expands Iowa campaign. Amid polling showing former President Donald Trump with a dominant lead in the Republican Iowa caucus race, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis dispatched three top staffers, along with more than 20 others, to Iowa this week as his campaign retains its heightened focus on the first-in-the-nation caucus state. DeSantis's campaign also released an ad that features his endorsement from Governor Kim Reynolds. Reynolds' endorsement will be a key to DeSantis' strategy to win over Iowa Republican voters ahead of the caucuses. She was slated to join the Florida governor for an office opening in Des Moines on Saturday. Headline, Discord over Regents Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Rules, or DEI rules. A member of Iowa's Board of Regents, which governs the three public universities, dissented as the group passed new policies around diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at the universities. Regent Nancy Dunkel said the rules were a political interference into the university's operations, and they were not carefully thought through. Headline, Congress passes Farm Bill extension. Iowa's congressional delegation applauded the passage of a stopgap bill to keep critical agricultural programs funded through the end of next year as lawmakers continue to negotiate the upcoming Farm Bill. The Farm Bill authorizes a broad array of agricultural programs like crop insurance and research and must be reauthorized every 5 years. All right, we'll now turn to page A7, or the business section of Saturday's Sioux City Journal, where we look to the reopening of the Missouri River Boat Club. Headline, quote, now we do not have to worry about floods. Subheadline, Missouri River Boat Club settles into new clubhouse. Nearly 4 years after the erosion on the banks of the Big Sioux River jeopardized their old clubhouse, the Missouri River Boat Club has finally moved into its new quarters in Riverside. The clubhouse at 1085 Council Oaks Drive held its grand opening last week. It's a very short distance from the old clubhouse and farther up the riverbank. The clubhouse's bar, called the Bent Prop, is open to the public. In parentheses, the Bent Prop is a legally distinct entity from the boat club. The bar leases the space in the clubhouse. The boat club itself, a group of boat enthusiasts and others who enjoy the river or the company of boating people, is limited to members. Club member and volunteer Charlotte Nelson said 100 people belong to the club, including 28 dock members who get an actual dock on the river. Dennis Butler, the club's fleet captain and a member since 1977, declined to say how much was spent on the new clubhouse, other than to say it was a lot more than what we planned. The new clubhouse was, quote, just finished about 4 weeks ago, said Butler, who is also the Woodbury County Budget Director. We started in April 20th, got done about 4 weeks ago. The old clubhouse, which still stands, is expected to be largely demolished, except for a patio area. Very little was salvaged from the old clubhouse and used for the new one, Butler said. Beyond the new building's nicer finishes is an amenity the old one lacked, restrooms inside the building. The finishes are like granite countertops and polished concrete floors, Nelson said, and then the bathrooms are now inside of it, whereas before you actually had to go outside to the restrooms to walk outside to another building. So the bathrooms are inside now, which is super awesome. Quote, it's just a lot nicer than what it was, Butler said. The old clubhouse, which was built decades ago, is right along the banks of the Big Sioux River. Beginning with the enormous Missouri River flooding of 2011, floods became an almost annual occurrence, each time washing more of the riverbank away. In 2019 alone, there were three floods. By December 2019, riverbank erosion became a five-alarm emergency at the old clubhouse. The following month, a large chunk of the riverbank collapsed, and on January 13, 2020, the clubhouse was closed. Its river-facing deck was detached, and the building itself sat mere feet from the edge of the steep, unstable riverbank. The Missouri River Boat Club was then facing a wicked set of problems. Not only was its clubhouse unusable, but membership had reached a low ebb. With fewer dues-paying members, the club, founded in 1955, had less money for a major undertaking, like building a new clubhouse. The riverbank erosion itself contributed to the declining number of dock members, as the riverbank couldn't accommodate as many docks. In parentheses, dock members contribute significantly more in dues to the club than so-called social members. In January 2020, leaders of the boat club were unsure if the members would be able to muscle the kind of volunteerism and financial contributions necessary for a new clubhouse. That fear turned out to be unfounded, though it did take a while. The fundraiser upon fundraiser were held beginning the bleak year 2020 and continuing on to this day. Well, really, the boat club has been built on volunteerism since its inception. Even non-club members pitched in. Butler wished to extend his gratitude to their general contractor, Westland Property Management Development, LLC, of North Sioux City. Well, we basically saved the day on getting the project done, Butler said of the contractor. Quote, we've been raising money, doing fundraisers, people were donating to us, labor and stuff like that to help us get it built, Butler said. The location of the new clubhouse further away from the river should make it more calamity resistant. Quote, now we do not have to worry about the floods, Butler said. All right, let's turn to the page A8, the State and Nation section of Saturday's paper, where we look kind of more on the book issue in schools and the controversy surrounding that about what books should and should not be available to public school students. Headline, BOE advances rules on school library restrictions. Subheadline, state will not provide master lists of books to be removed. State education officials will not provide Iowa school districts with the list of library materials now prohibited under new K-12 restriction rules, despite calls and suggestions for it to do so by school librarians, administrators, and a state board member. The Iowa Board of Education voted Wednesday to move ahead with proposed rules seeking to clarify restrictions under a new state law that prohibits books and curriculum in K-12 schools that contain descriptions of sex acts. The law also prohibits the teaching of sexual orientation and gender identity through sixth grade. The law, Senate File 496, passed by State House Republicans and signed by Governor Kim Reynolds, also requires school administrators to alert a student's caregiver if a student wants to use pronouns that differ from their sex assigned at birth. School librarians and administrators have said lack of detailed guidance on the implementation of the new law was causing headaches as they prepared for the school year, and many have said they want to see more guidance from the Department of Education to clear up uncertainties about the policy. State Board Education Board member Nathan Peterson, an Iowa City attorney, asked whether there was any effort by the state to provide a master list of what is or is not considered age appropriate, because it seems that there should be an opportunity other than going through every single book that's in their library looking for something that may be objectionable. It seems that there could be a resource a district could go and say, these have been found to be objectionable, should we have in our library? Peterson said during the meeting. An earlier version of the law would have required the Department of Education to maintain a list of books removed from schools. Thomas Mays, general counsel for the Iowa Department of Education, said because the requirement did not make it into the final law, he's, quote, not particularly interested in recommending it now. Quote, I think the more efficient thing is for superintendents talking to each other, sharing their collective wisdom with each other than a master list of books, Mays said. The proposed rules bar visual and written descriptions of sex acts in books, but clarify that references or mentions that do not describe or visually depict a sex act are allowable. School libraries serving multiple grades are expected to exercise reasonable physical, administrative, and technological controls to ensure that students only have access to materials that are grade and age appropriate. Quote, anyone who's actually read this law knows that certain school districts have been playing politics with their overly broad interpretations, House Education Committee Chair Skylar Wheeler, Republican of Hull, said in a statement. This is and has always been a reasonable law. Porn doesn't belong in schools, and parents should be more aware if their child is transitioning at school. Quote, unfortunately, the media allowed certain school districts to muddy the waters with weird rules about nicknames and by removing books that were never an issue. Hopefully, the Department of Education's rules clear any confusion and ensure Iowans know that this is actually a very common sense law. The rules also require school districts to maintain and update a comprehensive list of all books available to all students in libraries offered by the district on its website in real time, or at least twice a year. School districts can apply for a waiver over the next 2 years if they do not have an online card catalog, May said. Only library programs operated by a school district are subject to the proposed rules and do not apply to shared library programs between districts and public libraries. The rules allow for books to have, quote, neutral mentions of LGBTQ characters, May said. This includes an observation regarding a book character's sexual orientation or gender identity that stops short of being a promotion. Quote, this is sort of a safe harbor for classroom teachers, he said. The proposed rules also clarify the student can be called by a nickname without first receiving a parent or guardian's permission if not being used to affirm a student's request to recognize a different gender identity. Before the start of the school year, some Iowa schools require written permission from a parent or guardian to refer to a student anything other than the name or pronoun on the student's school registration records. For example, Thomas to Tom is fine, Mays said. School officials would still need to seek permission if a student wants to go by name other than their legal name or use pronouns that do not correspond with their sex assigned at birth if the request is an accommodation intended to affirm a student's change to a different gender identity. Wednesday's conversation marks the beginning of the board's process to incorporate the rules into Iowa's general accreditation standards. Penalties for violating the law take effect on January 1st. Iowa school boards and school employees who fail to remove books could face a written reprimand for a first offense. Additional violations could lead to school superintendents being called before the Iowa Board of Education examiners for a hearing and possible disciplinary action, should an investigation by state education officials find the district knowingly violated the rules. If a violation is, quote, voluntarily and permanently corrected before the department makes a decision, officials may exercise enforcement discretion and decide there is no need for a citation, May said. Mike Burnack, president of the Iowa State Education Association, the union representing Iowa's public school teachers, said in a written statement that the board's proposed rules did not go far enough in offering clarification and guidance over how educators should implement the law. The proposed rules do nothing to address the chilling effect the law has created, he said. So far, hundreds of book titles have been pulled from shelves across the state, and we've created ridiculous amounts of paperwork over topics like student nicknames, he said. Quote, public education professionals will still continue to spend valuable instruction time trying to meet vague state mandates, end quote. According to a database maintained by the Des Moines Register, districts in Iowa have removed at least 450 books from their shelves in response to the law. Many districts have removed commonly challenged books like, quote, Genderqueer and The Absolute True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. Books that are often assigned high school reading, like George Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, have also been pulled by several districts. Education and library advocates have argued an overly broad interpretation of the law by school districts trying to avoid legal repercussions will lead to schools pulling materials off library shelves that should not be removed under the law, depriving students of the opportunity to read books. The Urbandale Community School District initially removed nearly 400 books from shelves that felt may violate the law. The district subsequently narrowed the list to 64 titles after a more careful review. The Iowa City Community School District released a list of about 70 book titles removed from schools to comply with the new law. Lisa Remy, executive director of the School Administrators of Iowa, which represents more than 2,000 educational administrators, said the new rules support the guidance we have been providing members. All right, here's something that's nice and positive. Sister Cities 2003 to 2023. Headline, Celebrating Sister Cities. Headline, Yamanashi City and Sioux City Honor Anniversary. Leaders from Sioux City and Yamanashi City, Japan, celebrated their 20th anniversary of their sister city relationship Thursday and look to continue that special alliance for another two decades. A sister city affiliation between the two cities was signed on November 6, 2003. Yamanashi City, which is located roughly 100 kilometers from Tokyo, has a population of around 34,000 people. Sioux City has maintained a sister city relationship with Lake Charles, Louisiana, for more than 20 years and inked a sister city agreement with Gilgean, Kosovo in 2020. Quote, on this extraordinary occasion, we celebrate not just the passing of years, but the deepening of friendships, the strengthening of bonds, and the rich tapestry of cultural exchanges flourished between Yamanashi City and Sioux City over the past two decades. Mayor Bob Scott read from prepared remarks during the special program, which was held at City Hall and presented in both Japanese and English. Quote, the sister city relationship between our two communities is a source of immense pride for us. It's a testament to the power of friendship and the incredible impact of collaboration can have on shaping the destiny of nations. Gold star streamers hung from a wall and blue and silver tassels decorated the city council desk in the room. A sign printed in both Japanese and English welcomed the Yamanashi city delegation. Haro Tagasaki, the city's mayor, and Osamu Shimazaki, superintendent of education, Murinuro Hirano, manager of Yamanashi City Hall Regional Resource Development Division, Yu Watanabe, a staff member of the Yamanashi City Hall Regional Resource Development Division, and Miya Sudo, executive vice president of Sudo Manufacturing Company in Japan and a Morningside University board member. While in Sioux City, the delegation is visiting Jolly Time Popcorn, Morningside University, the Sioux City Art Center, the Sioux City Career Academy, the Sioux City Public Library, the Sioux City Public Museum, the Sioux City Police Department, and Western Iowa Tech Community College. Takahashi wished good health and happiness to everyone who attended the event, which included the exchange of gifts, the signing of the singing of the Yamanashi Municipal Hymn, and a video presentation featuring Yamanashi's city orchards, waterfalls, and forests. Scott acknowledged Tom Padgett, a former Sioux City mayor who was in attendance in Sudo, for being instrumental in the sister city relationship's formation and longevity. "But without Tom's leadership back 20 years ago, we probably wouldn't be having this relationship," Scott said. "I want to thank one other person, and that's Mia Sudo. Without her, I'm not sure the relationship would have prospered as well as it has, and she's been very instrumental in that." Trisha Rivers, a member of the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska and in the Inclusive Sioux City Advisory Committee's Native Representative, placed a folded star quilt on Takahashi's shoulder and handed him a book because, quote, "knowledge is invaluable." Other items she gifted the delegation included sage, sweetgrass, and wild rice, which she noted is native to the Ho-Chunk people. "Although our people have survived genocide, forced assimilation, and unfair treatment of the U.S. government, we are still here. Today marks a special day of friendship, of partnership," she said. "I hope that other world leaders can look to our friendships that we have created here." The Yamanashi City delegation presented Sioux City leaders with artwork from Ritsuko Suzuki, a citizen of Yamanashi City. One of Sioux City artist Paul Chelstad's pieces was given to the Yamanashi delegation. A handful of Chelstad's best-known artworks are being exhibited at the Nakamura Keith Haring Collections, a museum in Yamanashi Prefecture. City Manager Bob Padmore told those gathered that the sister city's collaborative projects stand as towering monuments to what can be achieved when two communities come together with a shared vision. He cited sustainable urban development initiatives and innovative public health campaigns as having transformed cityscapes and improved the lives of citizens. "Quote, in the role of education, our collaboration is nothing but short of transformative for student exchanges, joint endeavors, and scholarship programs. We've nurtured the minds of our youth, fostering a sense of global citizenship and instilling in them the values of tolerance, understanding, and cooperation," said Padmore, who ending his remarks by saying, "thank you very much," in Japanese. All right, let's now turn to the letters to the editor, the from local opinion voices from Siouxland. This is page A15 of today's Sioux City Journal, of yesterday's. Looks like we got 5 letters. This is nice. Got a collection. Journal editorial board. Oh, it's from the journal editorial board. So they have 5 things to be thankful for at Thanksgiving. Quote, as the nation celebrates the Thanksgiving holiday next week, members of our editorial board offer 5 things to be thankful for this year. Number 1, bountiful harvest. As the fall harvest winds down, overall corn production in the United States is poised to set a new record, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Corn yields in Iowa are projected to average a whopping 200 bushels per acre, with the Hawkeye State producing more than 2.5 billion bushels, the most of any state. Iowa's soybean harvest, over 570 million bushels, is projected to be the second most, behind only neighboring Illinois. Armed Forces. Men and women in our armed forces and their families make countless sacrifices for us. On Thanksgiving Day and every day of the year, we should give thanks to our armed forces who stand guard over our nation's security and freedoms. A special remembrance to the tens of thousands of service members who are deployed far from home during the holiday, stations in dozens of locations across the globe, which include hot zones in the Middle East and Eastern Europe. Faithful Voters. We are thankful for all those who showed up at the polls for the municipal and school elections on November 7th, and during every election throughout the year. Whether you are voting for president or the weed commissioner, there are important local decisions that these officials make, and the polling place is your first and best opportunity to have your voice. Likewise, we are thankful for the many candidates, especially those running in Sioux City's recent school board election, who put themselves out to run for a very difficult and often thankless office. Great weather. We are more than thankful for the recent weeks of warmer than usual weather. Being able to attend an early November high school football game in less than a down parka and insulated bibs is nothing short of a blessing. We will take all of the early winter warmth we can get. But no, this is being written in the last week when highs were in the 50s. If the weather turns Arctic between the time this was written and then when it's printed, it is Iowa after all. Just know that we were thankful for the temperate weather. While we have seen snow, it hasn't stuck, suggesting we might be able to get to the holidays relatively unscathed. If we can continue with higher temperatures during December, shopping, visiting, and celebrating could be accomplished without fear of icy roads, slippery sidewalks, and furnace problems. Finally, a robust school year. We can tell by the increased activities open to the public, achievements logged by students, and interest in serving on the Board of Education. Hopefully we don't have to go into Zoom mode during the rest of the school year and we can regain some of the progress lost during the pandemic. All right, now let's get the letters to the editor. That's what when I first took a look at the opinion page, I thought that what was at the top was the individual letters from private citizens. We got two letters here. All right, headline, celebration premature for Summit Pipeline. Landowners targeted for eminent domain by Summit Carbon Solutions won several victories in recent weeks, but the fight is far from over. The company suffered significant blows from regulatory agencies in multiple states. The North Dakota Public Service Commission, or PSC, denied the pipeline permit, and Oliver County denied the injection well permit. The South Dakota Public Utility Commission upheld county ordinances and denied the permit. Because of these denials, this is a pipeline to nowhere. Company CEO Bruce Ressler recently announced a two-year delay in plans to be operational. In the meantime, the company will reapply for permits in the Dakotas. As Iowa Utility Board's eight-week evidentiary hearing, Summit presented its case for the pipeline and landowners targeted for eminent domain testified to defend their property from condemnation. Their stories were gripping, some moving grown men to tears. In parentheses, landowner testimonies are posted on Bold Nebraska's YouTube page. The IUB must now review thousands of pages of records. It'll be months before the board announces its decision. Even if approved, the permit will be appealed and tied up in court, possibly for years. Summit must still obtain DNR water permits as well as county permits for wastewater disposal, air quality, road crossing, river crossings, and conditional use. Meanwhile, county supervisors and state legislators are working on regulatory reforms. The hearing has ended, but the fight is far from over. Impacted landowners will continue to rally against Summit's unconstitutional land grab. Celebrations are premature for Summit Carbon Solutions. Signed, Bonnie Ewalt of Milford, Iowa. Vietnam veteran. Quote, I smile, but I remember everything. On Thursday, November 9th, I had the opportunity to review the Vietnam Peace Project and exhibit at the Sioux City Art Center by artist Tio Nguyen. Part of the exhibit is a short 13-minute video. In it, he tells his mother's story of her struggles during what is known in Vietnam as the American War. She never talks about it other than through her poems. On Veterans Day, I, as a Vietnam veteran, especially identified with a sentiment in her last poem titled, I Smile, But I Remember Everything. This simple statement resonates with me, as that is how I feel. I'm sure many veterans of all wars feel on a daily basis, all the days of our lives. We quote, we smile, but we remember everything. To my fellow veterans of Veterans Day and every day, I wish you peace as you remember. Signed, John Mansfield of Sioux City. All right, let's now turn to the Ask Amy column in the horoscopes to finish out our broadcast for the weekend of November 18th and 19th. Ask Amy, her column is titled, A Reader Mourns the Passing of a Friend, in quotes. Dear Amy, I've been in a bad place and I'm a little surprised at the reason. I'm grieving over the death of Matthew Perry. I couldn't identify why I was feeling so low until I realized that I was feeling was grief. How can you grieve someone that you never knew personally? I think maybe it has to do with I felt this person gave to me. I just wish I could say thanks for all the laughs. What is your perspective on this type of thing? Signed, Hurting in California. Amy says, Dear Hurting, as of this writing, the death of this beloved actor is still very new, and I can well understand why you feel very real grief over his loss. Actors, musicians, and writers and other cultural figures can make an indelible mark on a real and lived experience. And when our loss involves an actor who created a memorable character who came into our living rooms over such a long period of time, you feel as if you lost a very real, quote, friend. Additionally, Matthew Perry's decades-long and very public struggle with addiction use disorder adds a sad and tragic poignancy to the end of his life, which came way too soon. Reading the accounts of the extreme physical consequences of his alcohol and drug addiction, as well as his many relapses, one realizes that fame, fortune, and the very best friends were ultimately no match for this disease. I read a quote from Matthew Perry where he said that he knew he would be remembered for friends, but that he wished he would be remembered for his role in helping other addicts on the road to sobriety. Many people currently in recovery have spoken publicly about his vital role in personally helping them, including his choice to turn his former home into a sober living home facility called the Perry House. His death is a loss to mourn, but also a legacy to celebrate. Dear Amy, my mother died recently after a brief illness. It was heartbreaking for me because my father died 10 years ago and now they're both gone. I sent a text to my close friends letting them know about her death and telling them that there would not be a service. My mom had requested to be cremated and to have a gathering for family only. My friends all responded with sympathy to my text telling them that my mother had died. My two closest friends asked if I needed anything. At the time, I really did not need anything, and I said no. One of these two friends has never called or stopped by to visit me. I don't know if I should reach out to these friends asking why they're ignoring me or just leave it alone. I'm very hurt and would prefer to end my relationship with them. Your thoughts? Signed, Grieving. Amy writes, Dear Grieving, my thought is that if you allow your grief to extend to ending these friendships, you will be very alone. Your friends may see this as you're giving you space. Two universal truths are revealed here. No two people grieve alike, and many of us behave within cultural norms that don't often teach us how to acknowledge others' loss and grief. Your friends asked once if you need anything, and now it's time for you to say, I really do need something. I need to spend some time together. I need to talk, end quote. All right, let's now do the horoscopes for today. Today's birthday, that's yesterday's, November 18th. This year amplifies collaboration. Steady practice provides foundations for creativity, connection, and ease. Share winter support before private springtime contemplation reveals valuable insights. Summer conditions favor physical activities outside. Autumn changes reorient creative and romantic plans for imaginative breakthroughs. Your partnership deepens and mellows. Aries, push past old social barriers. Friends and associates provide deeper insights. Don't fall for a trick. Discover unexpected benefits through a lucky connection. Taurus, adapt a professional project around unexpected plot twists. Things don't go as planned. Ideas spark when you're out for a walk or taking a shower. Gemini, slow to regroup. Scout out ahead before making your move. Changes affect travel conditions. Online research and meetings could save time and trouble. Cancer, coordinate around a change in plans. Pivot to adapt with unexpected expenses. More work leads to more cash. Pull together for common gain. Leo, save time and energy by avoiding irritations with your partner. Clean a mess before it gets out of control. Share the work and prize. Virgo, watch the road. Slow for tricky sections and sharp corners. Pitfalls abound. Don't push boundaries or limitations. Maintain a healthy respect for nature. Libra, get your creative, romantic plans could deflate. Things may not go as planned. Have fun despite a change or challenge. Reconnect with someone you adore. Scorpio, a domestic breakdown would disrupt. Make repairs or upgrades. Clean a mess. Provide support for a family member. Discover wisdom from children. Restore harmony. Sagittarius, patiently clarify. A misunderstanding or communication breakdown would cause delays. Backup hard drives. Get methodical with archiving. Sort and organize data. Simplify and share. Capricorn, keep earning. Don't spend your money before you get it. Simplify to reduce expenses. Replenish reserves. Budget and save for a special prize. Aquarius, ask for support when needed. You may feel especially sensitive. Take extra time for yourself. Recharge with music, beauty, and hot water. Reduce stress. Pisces, review plans. Keep or change your promises. Put things away. The more completed, the greater your freedom. All right, folks, that brings us pretty much to the end of today's and yesterday's Sioux City Journal for Iris. Your reader today has been Trevor, and I hope you all have a wonderful day. Take care of yourselves, and if you can, someone else. I wish you all a wonderful and Thanksgiving, especially if you're traveling to be with friends and or family. So be well.